Hi, I'm Jeff, and I'm a therapist.
And I'm Tyler, and I'm a patient.
We're going to talk about trauma, healing, and everything. Everything is traumatic.
We're talking about how therapy itself is traumatic.
Which seems a little weird to think, because we think of therapy as a healing art or a healing process, which it is. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that every part of the therapy process is pleasant or easy.
Right. I made it as like an offhand comment, I'm pretty sure. But like healing does not look pretty sometimes, folks. It's a very like tough, confronting thing to be met with some of that, those past experiences and thoughts.
I always think about it and sometimes talk to clients about it. It's like a wound healing. Yeah. So that it takes a long time for it to heal. And if you get it, if you scratch a wound, it bleeds. And so it's a long-term process of healing, which eventually will be a very positive thing. But during the process, it can be very painful and bleed, so to speak.
Yeah. Wow, what a good way to put it, too.
Yeah.
And I mean, I especially wanted to talk about it just because, like, it's something I'm currently kind of going through in therapy, just with doing the EMDR type of therapy that I'm trying. I've only done like a few sessions, but this last one was pretty heavy. And I'm trying to remember the acronym of what it stands for. Do you happen to remember, Jeff?
I think it has something to do with eye movement, but I don't. At this moment, EMDR, for those of who are listening that are not aware of it, is a type of therapy that works on, especially dealing with trauma. Mm-hmm. And it's about dealing with trauma and not being re-traumatized, basically. So it involves rapid eye movement, it involves tapping, it can involve a metronome, different things to distract the brain, so that you can safely deal with trauma and release trauma. I'm probably butchering that a little bit. I'm not an expert in EMDR, but that's my basic understanding of it.
Yeah, so it stands for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing.
Gotcha.
And it is used to treat PTSD and soldiers. Veterans usually like coming back, and I don't know if you just said this, but the idea of it, like when you enter REM sleep, your brain is like processing and taking some things like, okay, I need to keep this doesn't need to stay any longer, and like throwing out that. So the idea is to kind of like you're doing that same motion and kind of trying to just reprocess it to where you don't feel it as strongly, as you put it, like you don't get re-traumatized when you think about it, so to speak. I don't know if that's a good way to put it, but
no, I think that's a pretty good way to put it. And it is a little controversial in the therapy world. It's not because it is ineffective or dangerous in some way, but there are some people that are much more interested in quicker therapy and feel like that all this talk therapy without some kind of technique like EMDR is almost a waste of time. And then there are people that are we just need to sit and talk for a year and a half. I'm a little bit in between, where I feel like we use new techniques to help the process along, but I do believe in good old fashioned talk therapy too. So I think it's just another technique to use to help people work through their stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I think for me, just like for my trajectory. my fucking path with therapy, it's like we have like talked about it, and I've done like some of like the schema therapy and like identifying those and applying like some of the tools from fucking DBT.
Yeah.
So for me, this was, it feels like just like a next step of like how to work through it, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes me feel like your therapist is a good, healthy therapist, because I think the process is you just don't generally just jump in EMDR. You build some rapport, you form a relationship, you build trust, and then you process through some things. And I think the EMDR is allowing really your unconscious mind to release some trauma.
Yeah.
And it's hard to get at sometimes. And so the techniques that EMDR uses helps you to get at that trauma and also not be re-traumatized, which is, sounds weird, but our brain doesn't really know the difference between being traumatized and re-experiencing or having a flashback.
Right.
It all feels the same way. So it's helping your brain not be re-traumatized.
Mm-hmm. And like, especially with this last session, like it was just very heavy, like trying to go back. 'Cause like essentially like the whole memory was going back to the day that my mom passed away. So I was about 10 years old when that happened. And so like reliving that day and going through it, like I became fixated on like not remembering the whole day, but remembering like the pinpoints of that day, like the most important parts of that day and the feelings associated with those parts.
Gotcha.
So it was heavy.
how did you feel after the session?
I mean, I felt better, but I also felt raw. So I took the rest of that weekend to just like relax and paint and watch some stuff and like just take it really easy and do something that made me happy.
Yeah, I think that's really healthy. And you know, again, you had a sore or a wound that you ripped a little bit, you scraped a little bit, and so it's open again.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very important to take care of yourself. And I think people don't always understand, if they've not been through therapy, that it can be a very, very exhausting process, because you are being vulnerable. You are sharing pieces of yourself that are scary. That you're worried about judgment, you're sharing very painful things about yourselves. And it's hard to do, because we are sort of meant to protect ourselves from vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And so it's sort of a way of becoming, you know, like there's like cats. If somebody says, if your cat really feels safe, they'll bare their belly to you because that's their most sensitive spot. But they won't do that until they trust you. And so that's the same thing, I think, in therapy, is we don't share those pieces, those scary places, until we trust somebody. Mm-hmm. And then we can start sharing those pieces.
And letting them touch is an entirely different story.
That's right. You don't touch the cat belly.
You do not upset the Gigi.
You do not upset the Gigi. You know, and I feel, for most intentional purposes, a therapist should also not touch their client's belly. Mm. There might be an unusual circumstance, but in general, do not touch the client's belly. Even if the client bears the belly, don't touch the belly.
Don't touch the belly. No, do and that's what, I guess, because for me, it was like, it was just going through it and like re-experiencing it, re-feeling it, and like it was hard to even make eye contact, so I just like kind of chose not to. And it was very good to like build up that trust with someone before like going into something like that, because it is very just like, as you said, ripping off the scab, this calloused emotional scab that I just ripped off.
You know, and it's important to remember that therapists also feel for their clients. I mean, and in general, a therapist really does have a caring relationship with their clients. So it's painful for us to hear your pain.
Yeah.
It's painful for us to hear that you are in pain. And sometimes it brings up trauma from our past. And so we are trained to deal with that by not shoving it down, but not making a therapy session about ourselves.
Exactly.
So we can deal with ourselves in supervision or therapy on our own. But sometimes it does bring up a trigger from our past. And we have to sort of be like, okay, I'm going to put that to rest for right now because I am attending to my client. Right. And I'll deal with that later.
Yeah, I think that's what would make it hard for me to be a therapist. I'd be like, I would make it all about me.
Hold on. I'd like to talk about myself for a while.
I totally get that. See, that's like this time that happened to me.
I understand you're suicidal right now, but I would really like to talk about the problem I had in line and the bad service I got at the restaurant. If you'll just put that on hold, let's talk about me and my needs.
Let me tell you about tolls.
Amish tolls.
Let me tell you about the Amish tolls.
Man, I don't want to derail this therapy thing, but I'm pretty sure I got a $10 bill from a toll road that I don't even know that I don't even remember going through.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah. It just said toll something. It just came up on my credit card.
See?
Yeah.
Fucking Amish tolls, man. That's what they
are. I feel like, I know we talked last week and we don't want to belabor this anymore, but I fear the Amish will hear this and begin to harm us or to try to destroy our whole empire.
Right. We don't want to upset them. Not at all. No.
Yeah. So how long have you been in therapy?
2 years now, I guess almost three.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, I love that idea of being able to have a relationship with a client or a therapist in my case when I've done therapy for long periods of time, because I think it allows you to really grow at a pace that's, you don't have to move too quickly. You can just do it at your own pace. Mm-hmm. You do it with what you need instead of pushing and rushing.
Right.
It's like the insurance says, you got six sessions. You got to really, really jump in. And this, a long period of time allows you to really form a strong bond and relationship with the therapist and them to do the same with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause you gotta gel with them and you gotta trust them.
Yeah,
it's very hard to it's very hard to be that vulnerable with someone. You know, if you do not trust them, I think it makes it easier if you have to pay money, but you still gotta trust them a little bit.
Yes. Well, and we're, you know, we talked about these techniques, EMDR and different techniques, DBT, which is dialectical behavioral
therapy,
something. Yeah. There's all these names. When it comes down to it, none of these things can happen without a relationship with each other. And so you have to be able to trust your therapist. You have to be able to feel comfortable and vice versa. Mm-hmm. There are clients and therapists that match and click a lot better than others. And sometimes that's part of the game, is finding somebody that you really click with.
Yeah. Cause I've had friends say like they've had bad experiences with some therapists, and like, it's like with anything, you gotta find someone that you click with, or, you know, you feel comfortable talking to, at least, you know?
Yeah, and I think it's okay to interview your therapist in the sense of ask some questions. What kind of techniques do you use? Mm-hmm. Tell me what a basic session might be like. How confrontational are you?
Mm-hmm.
This is a controversial one, but some people will say you can ask them about their religious or political beliefs.
Yeah.
A good therapist should be able to see anybody from any kind of life circumstances. Mm-hmm. But some people may say, I just don't want to see somebody that thinks this certain way about this social issue or this political issue. And I think that's legit. I think that's okay to ask.
Yes, I do agree with that sentiment of like, they have the right to ask that. I just don't see the relevance of that.
Sure. I don't think that's important to everyone. But because again,
but it is important to some people.
Yeah. Again, a well-trained therapist is sort of a whiteboard in the sense of they're going to project what is projected onto it. So if I have a client that is in a religious system that gives them a lot of peace, I'm not going to try to take that away from them, regardless what my religious or political system is. Mm-hmm. I'm going to work within their system. And then the idea might be if they have some kind of very negative effect from that system, then we may look at that and just try to talk about how does this make you feel? But I don't want to take anything away from them that is working for them.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what I think. It doesn't matter who they voted for. You know, it's about helping them get to the best place that they can be.
Mm-hmm. No, that's I agree 100% with that sentiment. Like that, I don't think religious preference or moral beliefs like that doesn't matter if you click with them and you're able to talk to them and because if you're able to talk to them, you're able to work on yourself.
Right.
Because that's the ultimate goal. Like, it's great talking to a therapist that you click with, but ultimately it's you that dictates what gets talked about, what you do, what you express, what you choose to show them that day, essentially, which sounds kind of bad. That might be the bad wording.
No, I think that's it. It really, they're projecting themselves onto the therapist. And that doesn't mean the therapist doesn't have an idea or a concept or a core. Mm. But again, if I'm doing my job right, they're not going to know what my political views are or what my religious views are. You know, it's just not really that important.
It's not, but at the same time, like, I feel better knowing that my therapist is a little left-leaning.
I think that
we can have these shoulder nudge moments of like, the system, am I right?
I think that is important too. Sometimes that can be very healing to a person.
Yeah. It's having someone on their side. It feels more like they're on their side.
Yes. But I think the thing that's important is that whatever that therapist's beliefs are, they are on your side. Their job is to help you have a better, more fulfilled life without as much pain as you might have had.
Yeah.
So again, I don't care what system somebody comes from. My goal and my wish for them is to have a good life and to be happy and to get rid of baggage that comes up. It is sort of nice when you click and you're just like, okay, we know where we are. We know what we both think here.
Yeah.
But that's not necessary.
Yeah, it's not. It really isn't. But I could see that, like, for me, especially given just that other side of it, like, I could see it being at least a good selling point to someone.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah. And there are probably little words, if you read the bio of the therapist, that might give you a clue to which direction they lean, talking about maybe who they see or how affirming they are about certain things.
Yeah.
Should give you a little maybe nudge towards, okay, I think this person might be a little bit more like me.
Right.
But the important thing is, you know,
this therapist expertise is in businessmen. I don't know. Sorry, that popped in my head and I was like, that's because I get what you mean, because like there are some that like specialize in like transgender youth and stuff like
that. Yeah, you sort of get an idea. Maybe.
But I was trying to think of like the other side of that. specializes
don't in mess it. With the Gigi.
Don't upset the Gigi.
If the therapist says anything about Gigi, you just don't want to see them. That's all I'm saying. Yeah, don't.
If they're like,
do not doing see. That,
and they do that voice too, then you know they're
recommended by the Gigi.
Oh yeah, let me.
You know, I think it's the whole thing where like somebody like. A therapist doesn't have to have been married or to be able to do couples marital therapy. A therapist does not have to have a child to be able to help somebody with a child. So sometimes those things are very nice, but they're not necessary.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because like at the end of the day, that's not like their job's not to be an expert on their job's not to be an expert, but it's like they're I mean, it kind of is, but it's more like to guide them to reach their own conclusions, not inform them of like, all right, this is how the brain works. I mean, it is kind of, I feel,
yeah.
At least for me, like it's always like I have this thought, and then it's like I think therapists have a good way of like, oh, that thought is like similar to this concept of the da 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 da.
Yeah.
And you're like, exactly. Wow, okay, I didn't know that. That's really cool to put that, to categorize that.
Right. Yes. Yes.
So yeah, I think they're like Yodas. We all got some Yodas.
Yeah, but they're not all green.
And they don't talk backwards.
But, we don't talk mess with the Gigi. Gigi mess with you.
Hey. Gigi, you do not mess with. Yeah.
There you go.
That's you do not the upset. Yoda. There we go. Gigi, you do not upset. but I don't know. Like, and then I don't know. Like, I think therapy, I think I mentioned this before, but I feel like therapy really just, it doesn't work unless you kind of like believe in it a little bit and like are actually able to be 100% honest with yourself, like all of yourself, like accepting the bad, the good, the neutral, the weird.
Yeah. It's sort of like Santa.
Kind of. We're kind of like our own personalized Santas.
We are. It's interesting because sometimes people will come to me and they'll say, I don't really need therapy, or I don't want therapy. Mm-hmm. And then they'll start talking about themselves and like their problems. And it's like, okay, well, we won't do therapy then. Go on. So it's sort of that idea of, you know, I don't believe in that therapy stuff, but let me tell you about what's been going on with my wife.
Right. Like, yeah. Okay,
you call it whatever you want to. I'm listening.
I'm just trying to crack open a cold one and talk to you.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
Like,
I don't believe in that shoo-shoo therapy or that chakra stuff.
Like, I think that
Gigi stuff.
That Gigi.
That all Gigi frou-frou Gigi.
I think if I was a therapist, my office, I wouldn't have an office. It'd be a front porch and I'd have like a cooler with some beers.
That would help probably break the inhibitions a little bit.
It's like, man, like just hand them one, like you won't crack one. Like, all right, so what's been going on, man?
We know the session's over when three beers been drunk.
Like when the cooler's gone, when the cooler's like,
yeah, when the cooler's empty, you're done.
You're done.
You're done.
I got another session coming in. I got to fill up the cooler. It's like good old boy therapy.
Good old boys.
Well, hell, man, yeah, maybe if you just tried not to intellectualize all your problems, you'd be able to fill them correctly and thus come to a proper solution.
If you drink enough, you don't have no problem.
Yeah, hell, if you drink enough.
Yeah, it's interesting because us two men having this podcast, which I think is us trying to break down some machismo and stereotypes a little bit. But men do have trouble sometimes, I think, with therapy because of the constructs about when or about what men's roles are, and that men aren't supposed to talk about their feelings, and men aren't supposed to be sensitive. And so therapy is a way to do that, but sometimes men are a little less likely to do that,
right,
than women, because women are allowed to be about to talk about their feelings sometimes.
Yeah, and usually men are just kind of told to suck it up, man up,
yeah,
grow some balls,
yeah, rub some dirt on it,
get some ball seeds, put it in a planter, water it, care for it for about 4 to 6 weeks, grow some balls.
This is a little off topic, but I was talking to some friends last night. Do you remember ever getting the breath knocked out of you?
Yeah, I've had it happen.
Yeah, it's like we were talking about, like, in our, like, when you were a kid, it always almost involved some kind of jungle gym or swing set you were climbing on. You fall down, you hit your back, and you can't breathe. Mm-hmm. Feel like you're dying. Mm-hmm. And the other kids circle you, and you just lie there going, and if you lie there long enough, they begin to urinate on you. Okay. Or that might just be a specific thing I remember.
Okay. Yeah. Mine didn't involve like falling, but more like just kids beating each other up.
Get punched in the stomach.
Yeah. And having the wind knocked out of you that way. That shit sucks.
Gotcha. But there was urination at the end.
No.
We didn't, no, yours didn't have urination.
No, that must ours didn't. Ours, yeah, we didn't pee on each other, unfortunately. Yeah. we pooped on each other.
Oh, Gigi.
Gigi. We came from the Gigi neighborhood.
Oh, Gigi.
What I can remember, like, more of like a teenager equivalent to that, was like doing this thing called like a rising shotgun.
What?
A rising shotgun. So like it's when you would like take a hit of some pot and like hold your breath, and then someone would like grab you and like raise you up and essentially try to like pop your back. But the idea was to make you essentially go lightheaded and pass out.
Oh,
and I did it one time, and like I fell, like totally went limp, fell down, and then like immediately rose up. And when I came to, like everyone's cheering, and I just like looked so scared. So I mean, when you just wake up and everyone's cheering for you, it's a little scary.
Sure, you're not sure what happened.
Yeah. So that's like I think that's my more teenage equivalent to having the wind knocked out of me.
Gotcha.
But now it's just getting lightheaded from standing up too fast.
It doesn't, unless you're playing football or boxing or really and into physical activities, getting the breath knocked out of you doesn't happen a lot to adults.
No.
Not unless I guess that's because we're just sitting around all the time.
Not unless you get into it with fucking Terry at the PTA meeting. That's when you start knocking some fucking breath out.
Yeah. I think we all know who Terry is.
Oh, Terry, you fucking scumbag.
I wonder if the Amish ever have their breath knocked out of thee.
I'm sure they have their breath.
Thy breath knocked out of thee. Mother, thy breath was just knocked out of thee.
Oh, Don, they done knocked off my breath, Dar, Don.
Well, there, get their hammer and raise a barn.
We're never going to get any lessons in Pennsylvania at this rate.
I know, it's going to be bad. If we do, they're going to probably be part of the Amish Mafia.
Yeah, oh, God. God, I loved that period where it's just trash TV was like the hot new thing. Amish.
There was actually a show I think called the Amish Mafia.
There was Amish Mafia. There was Breaking Amish. There was I Woke Up Amish.
yeah.
So You Think You Can Amish. Who Wants to Be an Amish?
I do.
It was a great period. In time, I think we should shave off our mustaches and do a
I challenged you on Facebook to an Amish beard contest.
So is that what we're doing? We're shaving off our mustaches and just doing that?
Well, I mean, I have a job. I'm just not sure for how far I can take it. Right. When I retire, I can do the Amish beard thing whenever. But I don't know if they respect the Amish or Amish can work in Tennessee.
You know, they're talking about, is it raising or lower? I think it's raising the retirement age.
Yeah, that's what we need.
So do you think you can make it in time before they, you think you get grandfathered in to retirement?
I'm not working till 70, whatever they, I'm just not doing it.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm going to do. I think my retirement plan is nuclear holocaust.
Well, that's going to happen, so don't worry.
Exactly. My 401k is going to be an AK-47.
You know, and if the nuclear holocaust doesn't get us, or the whatever the new virus is going to be,
McCartney variant.
Yes. Then it's going to be some kind of insane, like, climate thing flooding. The whole, like, world will flood.
It's going to be the Earth. Either way, Earth is going to find a way to eradicate
us. It's been trying.
That we are, yeah, we're essentially a tumor.
I think it's like, okay, there's too many of them. Let's throw a virus at them.
All the other planets are like, Earth, you really need to get some chemo done. You're riddled with life forms.
Slow down you know, people aren't having kids like they used to.
I don't blame them. I wouldn't have kids. I still don't want kids.
Yeah, I don't either. I'm too old and I'm fixed, so yeah.
I need to get the snip.
I did have the snip.
That's right. You told me that.
Yeah, I'm all snipped up.
You're all snipped up. You're doing your part. You're shaving your part.
Not only did I get snipped, I got it cauterized. Because sometimes when they just snip, it grows back. So my doctor does the extra step of cauterizing each end so it can't grow back together.
Does he have a lightsaber so it just automatically does it?
Yeah, they have a tiny little lightsaber.
All right, Jeff, you just come in about a week and we'll cauterize the area. We did the vasectomy, make sure nothing's coming out.
So when I went in, the nurse, who was very nice, I had this done in my doctor's office because he does all kinds of procedures. The nurse says, okay, once we do the snip and once we've cleaned out your tubes, you will still ejaculate, but it'll just be like Diet Coke. It won't be full Coke. So there will be no swimmers in there.
This fucking bitch.
Yeah. She was very sweet. I mean, I didn't know what was going on. I'm like, I don't ejaculate anymore, right? No, you still ejaculate.
Oh, Jeff, I don't blame you at all. No, that's just like a weird... very weird analogy for Coke, from Coke to come.
Yes. From Coke to come.
From Coke to come.
The Jeff Snell story. From come to Coke.
From come to Coke. Oh, it's Lord. Diet Coke now.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So, I mean, I think that's in itself is more traumatic than therapy.
You know, I think there's those medical conversations, but part of what is interesting being a therapist is once people feel comfortable around you, they'll say almost anything. And so you hear a lot of things. And of course, we want people to be open, but you'll just hear stuff. And it's just like, I can't believe you said that out loud to somebody. I can't believe you admitted to that.
That happens to me now.
Yeah.
That happens to me now. Jeff, and I'm not even a therapist. You know what I tried the other day? So I was hanging out with some friends that are like they're professional wrestlers, basically. And
I'm sorry, the little people.
No, they're the big
full size, okay.
They're the big boys. And one of them brought up that he was like, you ever tried a peanut butter and mayonnaise sandwich? Mm. And I was like, fuck no, that sounds disgusting. That sounds horrible. Like, saying it out loud now, it sounds terrible.
Yes.
But he swore by it. We went and got bread. We got peanut butter. Mm. We got mayonnaise. Mm. and we tried it.
Mm.
And it wasn't great, but it didn't taste as bad as I thought. It's surprisingly, the flavors mixed okay, but it wasn't like good.
That just sounds horrible to me. I don't like, I'm not a mayonnaise person anyway. I mean, I'll eat mayonnaise on like in a
Jeff,
but I don't really like it.
Oh, I love mayonnaise.
Mm.
But I didn't like that combination.
Have you had a banana and mayonnaise sandwich?
No, but my dad fucking swears by them.
Yeah. Yeah.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah, it just sounds horrible to me. I guess that's that sweet and savory or whatever.
I guess it's just kind of like some redneck way of reaching like umami or whatever.
If you go way back, people used to drink buttermilk and eat onions.
Why?
Or pour buttermilk on cornbread.
What is wrong with humans?
I don't know. Buttermilk smells like shit.
Yeah. It's good for like tenders.
Yeah, but that's, you know, you're not really tasting the buttermilk in that, I don't think.
No.
Because it's cooked. You're tasting all the, it's like in the, it's in the batter.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it's more in the batter than anything. So, but human, like maybe that could be our next episode, is like the human taste bud is traumatic.
I mean, I think like beer, I just never have gotten a taste for beer, but beer has to be an acquired taste. Wine is an acquired mm-hmm. taste to me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, I guess there's like, I don't know. Have you ever eaten raw oysters?
Nope. Never tried oysters. I can't. They look too much like, and they look like they have the consistency of boogers.
Have you had a fried oyster?
No, okay. I don't think so.
A fried oyster is much. I've never had a raw oyster. But yeah, a
fried oyster is better.
I mean, it doesn't have a slimy consistency. It's just okay. Like a, but it's dark. I mean, like, you know, you bite into a shrimp and you got white meat. Yeah, an oyster is dark uh-huh. when it's fried.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know what that means, but.
It means that we're thinking about food here, Jeff.
I wonder if you dipped a raw oyster in mayonnaise.
Oh, fucking raw oyster and mayonnaise sandwich. You ever had one of them? Throw some peanut butter on there.
Raw oyster and mayonnaise.
Hell, you ain't never had a raw oyster, hell, Worcestershire mayonnaise sandwich.
Just take an egg yolk, put on top of it. It's all creamy.
Crack that. Suck that fucking, don't even cook that egg either. It's good raw. You ain't got to cook it.
So do you know what a tartare is?
Tartare.
Tartare is like a, not tartare sauce, but a, like a tartare. Meat tartare, which is raw meat.
Oh, yes. I've heard of
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but they tartare. Usually put an egg on it. And I'm just like, I might could do the meat, but not the egg and the meat. I don't like the consistency of a raw egg.
No, I want my meat cooked, unless it's sushi. I'll eat some sushi.
Yeah, I guess sushi is technically a tartare.
It's a tartare of sorts. I mean, that's like the equivalent of saying that a taco is a fucking hot dog or whatever.
Yeah. It's weird, though, because we eat generally what we are brought up around. And so if you were brought up in a place where oysters were part of your everyday stuff, you would like that.
Yeah, you wouldn't even bat an eye.
No, it's just what you eat. Just what you eat.
It's just what you would fucking eat. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why I like. Man. I mean, I'm not pro eating dog, but we're like, oh, they eat the dog over there. How barbaric! It's like we eat everything. We eat animals. I mean,
you know what, Jeff? I'm going to make this controversial statement, and then I think we can end the show.
All right.
I, as much as I love dogs, if I was in another country where dog was a delicacy, I would try it.
I feel like it's a very cocky thing to say you shouldn't eat something when
right.
Not everybody has. I mean, you eat what you, most people eat what they can, which went back to the old idea of you eat every part of the animal, which makes me sort of sick, the brain and the hooves and all the shit that people eat. But I mean, it's responsible. You should eat. If you raise an animal to be slaughtered, you should eat it. All of it. Mm-hmm. Instead of throwing all, parts of it away.
Every piece of it.
All of it.
Even the down to the udder to the horns.
Well, I think you use the udder and the horns for like party favors or accoutrement.
Fucking the beak to the legs.
Yeah. They eat chicken feet places.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. That's true. That's true. You know, Jeff?
Probably a good stopping point. Gigi would say, let's stop there.
Gigi would say, I think this is a reached its logical conclusion. Any final thoughts about therapy, not wasting animal parts? And
if you're afraid of therapy, just remember, it's just a conversation. Therapists are well-trained. They are bound by ethics to not harm you. And so, but it is okay to ask questions up front. So I feel like that most people's therapy experience is going to be a positive one, even though it goes through that process of healing that is sometimes painful, we talk about.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, if you think you're ready, if you're ready for therapy, if you feel like you could benefit from it, then I think you will learn that you can benefit from it. It's just based on what you're willing to try and benefit from.
Yeah. You have to be willing to put in the work and the time and the effort and be willing to feel uncomfortable. So.
Yep. That's right. It sucks, but it sucks now, but it'll be very rewarding when I, have self-confidence.
Yes.
And from all of us here at Everything is Traumatic, I am Tyler.
And I'm Jeff.
And take care of yourself, as always. I'm going to stop recording.